with that section that has to do with how do we deal with ego thoughts? How do we deal with fear thoughts? How do we deal with the regular thoughts that we have? Especially the ones that today is going to specifically deal with the emotion of anger. How do you deal with upset?
Oh, I don't have either.
You know, I know it's not relevant, but we're going to go ahead and cut it anyway because, you know, that was something we dealt with lifetimes ago, but we're just going to do a review section today. Okay? It's going to be page 45, paragraph 5. Page 45, paragraph 5. And I'm going to read through it first. This is going to have a lot of stuff in it that may be a little challenging, but I'll explain what it says. It says, anger in response to perceived, I'm going to call it ego thoughts, or fear thoughts, is a basic cause of fear. It's page 45 in the teacher's manual. So it says, anger in response to perceived ego thoughts is a basic cause of fear. And so I'm going to stop right there. Anger in response to perceived magic thoughts is a basic cause of fear. Anger in response, page 45, paragraph 5. Anger in response to perceived magic thoughts is a basic cause of fear. So a magic thought, the Course says, is any thought of separation, fear, lack, wherein any thought that you're doing it on your own by yourself. I'm going to do it on my own by myself. Because most of the things we get angry about are around the things we attempt to do on our own that's not turning out the way that we planned on it turning out. So the Course is saying, so a lot of times when people study the Course, one of the most common things that they'll say is they're upset with themselves about getting angry, or they're upset with themselves about getting depressed, or they're upset with themselves because they didn't have all loving thoughts towards somebody that they met. Or so the Course is saying, every time you get mad at your own ego thoughts, all you're doing is making yourself more afraid. So it's not, it may sound like it's a really high thing to do because you're upset with yourself all day because you're not being as spiritual as you think you should. But the Course says all you're doing is making yourself more afraid by getting angry at yourself about your ego thoughts. And I'm saying, and I need to hear it over and over again. This does not make you spiritual because you're upset with yourself all the time about not being spiritual enough. It does not make you spiritual because you get upset with yourself because you feel jealousy. It is not spiritual because you get upset with yourself because you feel insecure. It's not spiritual because you get upset with yourself because of your financial situation. It is not spiritual because you get upset with yourself because you're not as forgiving as you want to be. It's not spiritual to feel guilty. It's not getting rid of fear. But that's a very popular thing that the average person does, especially the person that's trying to grow and evolve spiritually. The minute a person says, I really want to wake up, I really want to be more loving, then their ego uses their goal to be more loving to constantly beat them up about not being loving enough, spiritual enough, generous enough, kind enough. So the Course is saying that is the basic cause of fear, which is the ego. So a person who's getting rid of their ego is really a person who's having all of their feelings and emotions without getting mad at themselves for having those feelings and emotions. Okay, the person that's really going toward love and really evolving spiritually is the person who can have all of their feelings without condemning themselves for those feelings. Just because I'm angry, that doesn't mean that I'm off the spiritual path. You know, if I can be angry and just admit that that's what I'm feeling, then the anger is actually not delaying me on the spiritual path. Especially if I know what anger is. Like, okay, I'm feeling angry, which means the Course says two things. I'm either trying to make myself or somebody else feel guilty, and somebody or myself, I'm not acting out my script. That's where anger comes from. Somebody's not doing the way I want them to be, and I want you to change, and so I'm so angry at you that hopefully you'll do what I want you to do, because you'll see how mad I am. So if I was to realize that every time I got angry, then I would actually be using anger for for my spiritual development. Because if I interpret it correctly, it's not delaying me. Honesty never delays us. Deceiving ourselves delays us. If I sit up here and I say, I'm feeling fear right now, that is not delaying me spiritually. If I sit up here and say, I'm not feeling fear right now, when I'm feeling fear right now, that's delaying me. And so a lot of times in the positive thinking movement, it's all about telling yourself you're never feeling what you're feeling. And that's why people get so frustrated on this path of positive thinking, because they'll say all the right things, but they're not seeing the result in their physical reality. They get frustrated, you know, and they don't realize it's because you're not being honest with yourself about your feelings. And so if I'm being honest with myself, then I won't get mad at myself for having the feeling. I'll just be honest with myself about what the feeling is.
And then what? Then do you move into going, you know, this need not be, or I don't like the way I feel?
Yeah, you know, and at least I can decide I don't like the way I feel now, so I hope I'm wrong. Mm-hmm. I want another way to look at this. Perhaps there is another way to look at this. What can I lose by asking? I'm giving myself all the feelings I have right now. I'm seeing only the past. I'm never upset for the reason I think. And then here's the trick. Even when you tell yourself those things, don't beat yourself up because of how you feel. because it's very rare that you're going to tell yourself a truth at first and completely reverse your emotional state.
Yeah.
I don't know many people that do it. Mm-hmm. I don't know many people that they're really, really angry, they tell themselves a true statement, and they're immediately in a state of total peace.
Yeah.
It will happen. I'm not saying it won't happen, but it's much more important to not beat yourself up about the feeling than freaking out because you can't change the feeling as fast as you want to. Mm-hmm.
Do we have a second, Chris?
Yeah, sure. That's what.
I was pulling into Target, and I was waiting for this car to pull out. And as soon as he pulled out, I started to pull in, and this guy, I guess, was thinking that it was his parking space because he started screaming. You know, I mean, this verbal language was going on. So I backed back out and said, "What?" You know, I didn't even realize he was sitting there. So, and then I pulled, you know, forward, and he, like, was giving me the, got out of his car, and he was giving me the finger, and he was just, like, in this rage.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, and so I'm kind of, like, watching how I'm reacting to this. You know, I'm sort of, like, observing, how am I reacting to this? Because first I was in fear, and I thought, you know, do I even want to go in there now? Because I don't want to run into this guy. And then I thought, no, darn it, you know, this shouldn't be affecting me, you know. So I, you know, just kind of watched, though. It was sort of interesting that I could get into the observer and watch how I was reacting, you know. And maybe
that's a major, major growth indicator.
Yeah.
You didn't react.
Yeah.
You acted. You didn't react. That's good stuff.
I just went, oh, this guy is really.
That's good stuff.
Today.
The first thing it hit me when he said that was, he wasn't upset for the reason he thought. See, he wasn't really upset about that.
Yeah.
See, that was totally out of proportion to what happened. There's 100 parking spaces in the place, right? So you know that he was really upset because he was seeing something that wasn't there. He was seeing his past. He was bringing his past into the present. He was bringing his whole life story into that moment.
Wow, he was just...
Yeah, he didn't have anything. He never saw you. It had nothing. He had, that's why sometimes my heart goes out to people who have service jobs. Because they become nothing but the projection screen for everybody's frustration, because people feel like they can take it out on the waiter. You know, they can take it out on the clerk. They can take it because they feel so powerless in their day-to-day experience that when they come into a situation that they think they have a little bit more power, then they go off. And that's exactly what happened, you know. And so that was great.
Fortunately, in my life, I don't have that many incidents like that.
Yeah.
But it was just sort of like this.
Then it used to happen more in the past.
Pardon?
I remember in the past that stuff like that used to happen to me a lot more. Like, I notice now that things that used to be common occurrences very rarely happen.
Yeah.
Because of my own change of mind. But I remember stuff like that would happen all the time. You see somebody in traffic that goes off of you about, you know, something.
Yeah.
Yeah, which I always think is insane with somebody that's handling your food. That never makes sense to me, but it makes sense to some people, but it never makes sense. It's like, why would you be going out with somebody that's handling your food? Same thing with the mechanic. You know, you go off on a mechanic and then you leave your car there. You know, it's like, come on. You know, that's not even common sense. You know. Okay, so.
We need to have common sense when you're.
Well, you know, the Course in Miracles, it's funny you should say that, because the Course in Miracles says the second coming of Christ is nothing but the return of our common sense.
Oh, man.
I love that. I don't remember exactly what chapter, but when I first read that line, I thought that was priceless. That you coming back into Christ consciousness, or of course we call it sane consciousness. It's just getting back to common sense, which people have kind of lost track of. So he says, anger in response to perceived ego thoughts is a basic cause of fear. Consider what this reaction of anger to your ego means. And its centrality in the world's thought system becomes apparent. A magic thought, here's a definition, by its mere presence, it's a thought that acknowledges a separation from God, which we could say a thought that acknowledges a separation from love, a thought which acknowledges a separation from peace. All right. Said the magic thought states in the clearest form possible that the man which believes, and this is going to be deep, so you might go right past you and I'll share, okay? I'm going to give you a warning, okay? The man which believes it has a separate will that can oppose the will of God also believes it can succeed. Mm-hmm. That you can succeed in opposing the will of God can hardly be a fact is obvious. Yet, that it can be believed as fact is equally obvious. For instance, here's a great example of that. The Course continually tells us that God's will for us is perfect happiness and peace and joy. Right? We think we can do things that come up with things that oppose God's will, so that it seems like we are not experiencing nothing but light and joy and peace. See, a lot of people think of opposing God's will as meaning I'm fighting God or I'm fighting the truth. It's really me not allowing myself to have joy and happiness and peace in my life. That's the opposition to God's will. You know, God saying that I'm innocent and me saying that I'm guilty. That's the opposition to God's will. The universe being about my abundance, but me believing that nothing goes right for me, that's me opposing God's will. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
See, it's totally different from how the ego would describe that. Then it says, I love it, he says that this can hardly be a fact, it's obvious. You can't. He said, but we can believe it as fact, it's equally obvious. And herein lies the birthplace of guilt. Now, if those of you who have a religious background, you will really be able to relate to this next sentence. Who usurps the place of God and takes God's place for himself now has a deadly enemy. God is out to get you because you are bad. And so now you must stand alone in your protection and make yourself a shield to keep you safe from the fury of God that can never be abated and the vengeance that can never be satisfied. How can this unfair battle be resolved? Its ending is inevitable, for its outcome must be death. Notice that's what happens to us in the end. Of course, you know, we think we battle, but we also end up seeming like we die. So it doesn't look like we won the immortality battle, to say the least. How then can you believe in your defenses? He says, well, magic, again, must help. So rather than try to figure any of that out, the next sentence says it all. Forget it. It says, forget the battle, except that you got a battle going on as a fact. He says, then just forget it. Okay, there's a battle going on. Okay, he says, don't remember the impossible odds against you. Don't remember the immensity of the enemy. And don't think about your frailty in comparison. Most people don't. Most people don't realize it's impossible for them not to be happy in the end. Most people don't remember that God is greater than they are. And most people don't think about their frailty in comparison to God. They're mostly thinking about the Rockies game. Right?
The Rockies.
Right. I'm not knocking that. I'm just being straight up. Most people think about their day-to-day stuff. Right. So he says, accept your separation. I love this. He says, accept your separation, but don't remember how it came about. How good are we doing at that? Mm-hmm. I do think I'm separate, and I don't remember how it came about. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty much asking us to do what we already do. Mm-hmm. I accept that it looks like I'm separate from you, but I don't really know how it all came about. Mm-hmm. Accept that. And he says, also, believe that you have won your separation. Okay, I accept that. It looks like I really am separate. Then it says, but don't retain the slightest memory of who your great opponent really is. And if most people be honest, they really don't remember God. They hear about God, they read about God, they study about God, they meditate on God, they hope there's a God. But how many people really remember their direct relationship with their Creator? Like we're having a relationship with each other. We don't. It's more like a concept that we are believing in, or that we're hoping is true, that we would like to know is true. For most people, I mean, it may not be true for you, but it seems like it's true for me and most people that I know. Because I think if they really had a direct relationship with the Creator and you knew you did, I don't think you'd be afraid. I don't think you'd do anything other than what you wanted to do every day. And I don't think you'd be worried about security. And I don't think you'd be worried about your health. And I don't think you'd be trying to take care of yourself. And I don't think you'd be wondering whether or not you'd have relationships that are... You know what I mean? Like if you really knew you were taken care of, it's like a little child in the yard playing. Now they don't play in the yard anymore, do they? A child... That's the olden days where I grew up.
The video game.
Yeah, the child is killing 10,000 people in a video game every hour. It's a long way from that stick I used to ride. I tell you. You know what I'm saying? It was like pure imagination when I was a kid. You know? It was everything. You made it up, you know. I vividly remember my rope train. It was a train, but it was a rope I pulled through the yard. And I had specific times of the day that I did it. I was very organized. My train ran on schedule. I pulled that rope around the yard every day at 4 o'clock. I pulled the rope, you know, and I pulled it so much that it like made a track through the yard, right? And then I had two Pepsi bottles. Those were my railroad signals on each side of the railroad. You know. So anyway, now I go, you know, when I was visiting my son, to, you know, he had Halo 3, and I thought I was in another dimension. I was rocking, and all the speakers behind me, the big giant screen, and he was shooting everybody. It was a trip. It's such a difference now. It's unbelievable. But that's what's happening now. The illusion, it's getting harder and harder to tell the illusion from reality, period. You know what I mean? So it's not going to be too long before, you know, we are projected into, like you go to the movie and you end the movie.
Virtual.
Yeah, they're going to have goggles or glasses or something, and you'll be in it. It's already like that, and you'll be in it.
Yeah.
And so this, no movie screen at all. You're in it. But that's what this is.
Anyway,
that's what we don't realize, that that's exactly what this is. You know, we have been projected into a hologram. What's it called, a hologram?
Yeah.
So this is what this is. And the sooner you realize it, the sooner you have fun with it, and the sooner you have what you want in it. It's funny to think that the way you have what you want is to realize that that's what this is, an illusion. And by illusion, I mean it's not something that's permanent and everlasting. It changes. So, anyway, and I love this last sign. He says, projecting your forgetting onto God, it looks like the Creator has forgotten you. Yeah. So it looks like there isn't a Creator, and it looks like the Creator has just forgotten us, and we're just out here trying to make it. Right? And the Course says the reason why it seems that way to us is because we've forgotten the Creator. We don't focus on the Creator, so we think the Creator doesn't focus on us. And it also says the Creator doesn't operate the way we do, and so therefore we don't know our relationship with the Creator because we don't speak the same language. We're making up our own rules as we go along, And so we haven't learned the rules of the real rules of communication with the Creator. That makes so much sense to me. It's not that the Creator doesn't exist, you know. Like, if you want to talk to somebody who's not in your physical vicinity, you're pretty much going to need a cell phone. So they exist, but if you're not willing to obey the rules of communication, which means you need some form of communication device, you don't talk to them. But it doesn't mean the person doesn't exist. And that's what the Course says we're doing. It's not that the Creator doesn't exist. We won't use the cell phone. We'll look at the cell phone and we'll go to the mall, but you know we don't buy it. But then we mad because we can't talk to nobody. It's like a person mad because they can't talk to nobody. But you don't have a telephone. You can't talk to the person that's in another city. I should be able to, because I made up that I should be able to talk to them by picking up these glasses and talking in these glasses, and that should allow me to talk to that person in the other city. You see what I'm saying? We're making up our rules for communication. Then it doesn't work, and so we think that the communication can't exist. And then you say, well, no, you got to pick up the phone, then you can talk to that person. They go, oh, so they pick up the phone, now they can talk. Pick up the phone, then you can talk. That's so brilliant, so tired. I don't know what to say about it. I don't know where it comes from. It just comes out. Oh boy, it's so funny. Okay, any questions about that? Like I said, I welcome that discussion on Wednesday. So, you know, any thoughts about those two paragraphs, which were pretty intense and kind of abstract a little bit?
I think Jesus got a sense of humor as well.
Me too. No, if you really read the Course right, it's hilarious. If you read it correctly, it's the funniest book you've ever read, you know. You know. Why are you afraid? Because you're crazy. Like, why am I having problems? You're totally insane. That's what this book says, you know.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you. I just wanted to let you know that's why nothing's going right. You're wrong. And we on the spiritual path, you never want to hear you're wrong. Because metaphysically, every direction is the right direction.
All right.
Yeah, so everybody always says, well, you know, there's no such thing as right and wrong, you know. It's like, yeah, at another level, there isn't. But in terms of being in a time-based dimension, you better pray it's a right and wrong, because it saves you time. So you want to go down to peace, right? And you want to go left, and peace is right, right? And I say, if you turn left, that's the wrong direction. Would that be helpful to you? Of course it would. But suppose I said, every direction is the right direction. You want to go that way to go to peace? Go. You'll eventually get the peace. It'll be 6 months from now. So you're right. All directions are the right direction. But wouldn't you like somebody to say that's the wrong direction? So that's the kind of logic that the Course presented to me after I had been so deep into metaphysics that made so much sense to me. You know, it's like, thank you. Yeah, I need you to say that's wrong-minded for me to do that. Thank you. Don't tell me. He's a classic line, and he says, you don't have time enough to try all directions.
Ooh.
Right. You die first.
Right. Oh, yeah.
It's to the body experience. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it would be better for someone to say, this is the direction you should go, and this will be the best direction for you to go, as opposed to that one over there. That's loving. But sometimes when I've met people on the New Age path, they actually get mad when you say stuff like wrong. Well, there's nothing wrong. Everything's right. You know, so okay. You know, okay. Go ahead.
Yeah, whatever.
Whatever. No problem. You must know the guy in the parking lot at Target. Huh?
When you were talking about, you know, and having no fear, and, you know, I mean, Gandhi came to mind to me. Mm-hmm. And Jesus, you know, they had no fear. I mean, they, you know, he hung on the cross. I mean, there was no fear. So that's what you're talking about, is the consciousness of...
Yeah, you don't reach that consciousness until you know you're not a body.
Right.
Because as long as you had a fear of death, you'll never be free.
Right.
See, that's what scares people about the people in the Middle East. You know what I'm saying? Someone who thinks that taking their own life is going to give them glory is a much more frightening enemy than somebody that's trying to hang on to their life no matter what. That's why, in a way, at the level of the world, to me, we're just stirring up a hornet's nest. It's like we're going in there and going, you do not want thousands and thousands of people who believe that death is a good thing. There are no American suicide bombers. You know what I'm saying? The average American is not going to sacrifice their life for a cause. Now, let's just be honest. The average American is a comfort freak. You know what I'm saying? It's like, I remember a cartoon I saw in the paper where the guy was reading the paper, and he was sitting up in their car, and he said, God, the global warming said that the temperature has gone up like 6 degrees, you know. And the guy said, aren't you glad that we're in an air-conditioned car? Did you get that? You know, it's like instead of realizing that that's why global warming, he's like, well, aren't you glad we're in the air conditioning? That's America. You know what I'm saying? America's like their comfort. You know what I'm saying? You know, they could have, the average American could have something that they feel very strongly about, but you very seldom going to see them pick it. Or just, you know, we don't do that. You know, so we don't go, please, let me strap some bombs to me so that I can go and get the infidel, so that I can go to heaven and have my 21 virgins, or have it as it is, you know, which I guess that's the only place 21 virgins left. But but anyway,
72.
Oh, 72. 72. What are you going to do with 72 women anyway? You have to be a masochist. But that's, first of all, you can't love yourself and want 72 women. You got to be crazy to begin with. Like, oh, why would you want 72 women? You know, yeah.
Okay. Didn't like Gandhi and Christ and sort of give their life for a higher ideal or a higher purpose? Or
but it wasn't looked at the way we look at it. The difference is how they perceived it. You know what I'm saying? It's like if I know I live forever. And you've forgotten that you're just like me and you live forever. And then I come and show you that we don't die. Then it really wasn't a sacrifice because I don't die anyway. You know what I'm saying?
So many Christians still interpret it as that it was a sacrifice.
Right. But that's the era teaching that keeps everybody in. It's the message. The message was the resurrection, which the innocent man focuses on the resurrection. The guilty man that likes to punish and sacrifice focuses on the crucifixion. And that's what I used to wonder if people were reading the same Bible that I read when I read the Bible. I was like going, it was so many things in the Bible that I'd never heard. Like Jesus said in the Bible, don't you know that ye are gods? It means right there, ye are gods. How many times you heard the minister say that behind the pulpit? Right. Or he said constantly, these things that I'm doing, you can do greater things than this if you believe. According to your faith. People don't bring up the fact that there were some people he didn't heal. And he said he didn't heal them because of their faith. You know what I'm saying? So he was constantly saying it was your thoughts and your consciousness and your faith and your belief. And he constantly said he came to die. That was the other thing that was interesting. More than once he said he came to die. You know, that he came to give a message. He came as an example. So he knew everything that was going to happen to him before it happened to him. And he said it was a reason that it was going to happen to him. But again, if you want to feel innocent, you'll see that as a beautiful thing and a loving thing. If you want to feel guilty, you'll go, we kill God's son. You know, says, wait a minute. Why would God's son be such a wimp? You know, how could the creation of the most unlimited being in the universe
be a victim
to us? You know, again, but a person with a victim consciousness interprets things that way because that's the way they look at their life. That love is sacrifice and, you know, they're going to be nice and going to be crucified for being nice, which is happening to Jesus. You know, he healed everybody, fed a bunch of folk, and what did he do? They strung him up. And at one point in the Bible, it's an interesting story if you ever read it. At one point, they had a choice of freeing Jesus or freeing two robbers. Guess who they freed? They chose the robbers. You know, and so Jesus' story is really our story. It's like a perfect example of what we've all experienced, trying to be nice and loving and then being misperceived for it. You know, we've all experienced the crucifixion experience, helping somebody out, then they end up being the one that attack you for what you tried to do. That's our story. And then we're stronger than that, so we come back and resurrect from that situation. That's our story. Jesus' story is our story. Whether you believe it happened or not, it's what happens.
So when you say you didn't heal some people, meaning, you know, you healed yourself.
Right.
Your own willingness.
And right.
When some weren't, they just weren't.
They just weren't, because he says, the Course teaches that healing is a collaborative venture, which means that it comes from joining. So I got to join with you in the idea of your happiness for your happiness to happen. It's not enough for me to want you to be happy. You got to want to be happy too. And then I can support you in that. But if you don't cooperate, how can you be happy? No matter how much I love you. Like, we've seen people like that, our friends and lovers, where it's nothing you like more than to comfort that person and nurture that person, but their own perception of themselves is so distorted that no matter what you do, they can't accept your kindness. So they have to go into agreement. They have to go, you know what, I want to be healed too. I know I got some issues, but I really want to go beyond them. Can we do that? Mm-hmm. Collaborative.
And so the enemy in the garden is the fabrication of the, of course he suffered and the tears mm-hmm. of blood, and of course he was having a hard time.
Yeah.
Not just acceptance, and this is the plan, and this is my willingness.
That's right. And then Judas played the role that Judas was supposed to play. You know, that was his role in the play. You know, just like the people in your life that give you the hard time, they're the Judas in your life. You know, they're playing the role. They're playing the role that makes you live up to the truth you say you're about.
Where do you find the teachings of Christ? I mean, I know there's a Bible. Mm-hmm. I know there's a bunch of them. But if you kind of wanted it more distilled, kind of like what you're talking about, Luke.
Actually, it's the Course itself is that. Really, chapter 6 in the Course is the chapter that deals specifically with the crucifixion and the resurrection. And then there's a section in here that goes, what is the resurrection? You know, so there's some things in the Course itself that deals with that.
Is it chapter 6?
Chapter 6 in the text. It's called the Lessons of Love. And that whole chapter is Jesus going step by step about what the whole crucifixion really represented and what it really meant. And then it says that you don't have to believe in Jesus in order to benefit from the Course. But at the same time, hey, if you did, it just make it easier, you know. But it's not necessary.
Can you say the definition again of illusion?
Yeah, there's several definitions, but the course of the simplest definition is what's not, it's what changes, what's not permanent, and what doesn't last. And the other definition of illusion from the Course is something that you want to be true even though you know it's not. Something that you want to be true so bad you're trying to make it true. People do that in relationships a lot. Like, I want you to love me, you really don't, so I'm going to make up that you do love me just because you happen to look at me more than 5 seconds, so you must have the hots for me. Because I really want you to have the hots for me, and I noticed that a couple of times, you know, you blink 2 times and blink it 2 times, and that means you got to have me. See, that's the illusion, you know what I'm saying? And then I'm going to deal with you like that's true.
Yeah.
And I'm sure we've all had that, where people just want it to be true. So they just make up that it's true even when it's not. Or like somebody wants to believe you don't like them. And that no matter what you do, they want to believe it so bad they're trying to make it true. And so the Course says the way that you can tell something isn't ultimately true is that it doesn't bring you peace. And you could just go by that. You know, if my life isn't bringing me peace right now, then I can comfortably say I'm making some kind of error about the way that I'm looking at my life. The choir, because if I was looking at it correctly, I'd have peace. I'd see the purpose, I'd see the beauty, I'd see how everything that I'm going through is serving some greater purpose and some greater good. Mm-hmm. If I was seeing this world correctly, there would be nothing in this world that upset me. Isn't that interesting? Because I would know that no matter what's happening, no matter what it looks like, it must be serving some type of a higher purpose that I don't understand.
That's hugely challenging.
Yes, it is. I totally agree.
And I know what you said earlier, because it's like, you say, well, do you have a relationship with God or the divine or whatever? But, of course I do. But it's like, yeah, but if you really did,
yeah,
it wouldn't be a problem.
Yeah, if you really did, you wouldn't be afraid. What are you worried about paying that bill for?
Yeah.
And people hate it when you do stuff like that. You know, it's like, it's so easy to blow our belief in God stuff. That the Course did that for me and to save my life. It made me realize I didn't believe 99% of what I said. And that's why I wasn't getting the result. Mm. And so by doing that, it gave me a reality check that allowed me to start to really put the things in place that really would make it happen. But I had taken my metaphysical new thought spiritual work and had just lied to myself so bad it was ridiculous. You know? I mean, you see it all the time. Go to the new thought churches. Go to the new thought groups. And listen to everybody expound on these principles. And then talk to them and see how much drama is going on in their personal life. And they don't even make the connection. You know what I'm saying? Like, you're saying all this stuff, but at the same time, you know, you're upset about this, and you're saying that the reason why you got fired was because of the economy. Wait a minute. If you believe you're the creator of your reality, the reason you got fired is because you wanted to be fired.
Okay, so can I just ask you what about when, because I've had some conflict with this, that I go sometimes to Mile High or to Unity and stuff, mm-hmm. and that they often talk about God still as being here, creating this, mm-hmm. like creating the physical, mm-hmm. which the Course doesn't teach that. So often people will say it, I'll hear them say this, they'll say, well, it was meant to be, that was God's will. And what I really see with the Course is it says that God's will is that I be happy and that I be at peace. And it has nothing to do with God's will is that I close that sale or that I buy that house or that I move to Denver.
Right.
So I've done a bit of conflict.
Well, the way that I resolved that conflict was to accept the idea that the Course also teaches that, you know, the Holy Spirit meets whatever need that you think you have at the level that you think you need it. It also says that too, as long as you don't want to use that thing that's to linger in time and stay in the illusion. Mm-hmm. So yeah, in the ultimate sense, of course, God could care less whether I close that sale. But in the sense of tapping into the Holy Spirit, which is the intermediary. See, that's the thing that people forget about the Holy Spirit, is the intermediary. Well, he says the intermediary, which is the Holy Spirit, is the part of God that's aware of the truth and also the part of God that's with us that's aware of our illusions. And now I always wonder why people leave that out when, like you say, I've heard many Course teachers bring up that point. But they never bring up that other side that he states in the book many times, that the Holy Spirit does perceive our illusion. That the Holy Spirit is actually the mediator between the two.
So do you say God is within us, or do you say the Holy Spirit is within us?
Both would be true. It's like when we try to analyze it like that, we know what part of us is doing that.
Yeah.
Immediately. Because it really doesn't matter. Like, this line is good that goes, I don't believe you can ever invoke the idea of a higher power in any situation and that be wrong or bad. I mean, that's my personal thought. I mean, how could there ever be any situation, no matter what that situation is, that could be wrong for me to ask for the Holy Spirit or the higher self or spirit to guide me or help me or be there with me? Think about that. How could you do that wrong? What's going to happen if you call on God in the wrong situation? You know what I'm saying? You know, it's like, how could you not call on the love that created us in any situation?
Yeah, I get that, but it sounds like you just made a distinction between, like, a function or something, or made up an understanding. Like,
well, that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. This is the kind of thing that is confusing. This is the kind of thing, like the God... It's the creator is only aware of itself. We as part of the creation, we can believe we're anywhere. I can sit up here and believe I'm in France right now and could have all kinds of adventures of Earl in France right now, right? But it's in my mind, right? It's not really happening. I'm sitting in the chair. Okay. Earl just went into the parking lot. Wow. That was incredible. Somebody just came up to him and said, would you like to have $2 million? Whoa, that'd be cool. Then Earl can also have a person walk up in my dream representing the truth and goes, Earl, in your dream of being in France, I'm right here with you telling you that you're having the dream of being in France. See, that would be my own truth self, right? Entering into my dream, telling me the truth about my dream in my dream. That's the same way that the Holy Spirit would be. Just visualize it for a second. Just be there for a second. If you were to imagine you were in Paris, could you not also imagine that you could have someone walk up to you and say, you're having the dream of being in Paris? Mm-hmm. Of course you could. Of course you could. That's the Holy Spirit. The Holy Spirit is the part of you that would know you were still sitting in Unity Temple and also know you were having a dream about being in Paris. And we could communicate to you through that illusion that you were having, right? To bring you back to the realization you ain't in Paris. And there's nothing to be afraid of. You see what I mean? Yeah, and that's what's happened. That's what happens to us. Our real self is trying to reach us in our dream to let us know that we are love, that we are innocent. This is what Jesus did. Hey, y'all, I'm trying to let you know all the stuff that you think you're doing, you can't do. That you really are a loved child of God, that you're indestructible, that you live forever, that you create your reality, and you're creating this one. And I'm trying to let you know I'm coming in here. I'm the part of you that's coming in here to let you know that you're fooling yourself. That's Holy Spirit. It's the part of us that knows both of them. You see what I'm saying? And then God, quote unquote, right, created who? The Earl that's sitting in the chair, right, having the fantasy of being in Paris. So God is totally removed from my illusion. But God is also the part of me. You see what I'm saying?
Yes.
God is totally removed from my illusion, but God created me. And I, my greater self, my spiritual self, is able to go into my dream.
But not Earl the body. God didn't create Earl the body.
Right.
Creative.
No, Earl the body is being imagined.
It's
being imagined in my mind.
Yeah.
It's deep now. We're getting deep now. I know we're getting deep. Like smoke will come out of people's ears in a minute. So, in other words, if you want to cut to the chase, if you recognize your innocence, everything will be healed. The Course says that is the single most important idea that will straighten out everything, so that we won't get caught up in the concepts.
And that's the atonement.
That's the atonement. The atonement is recognizing that you're innocent, that you haven't really sinned. You haven't done anything.
And that's why you have to practice forgiveness. Because as we forgive others, we forgive ourselves.
So,
it helps us to remember that we're innocent.
That we're innocent. And if I'm innocent, I don't believe I deserve to suffer. If I don't believe I deserve to suffer, I have a world that doesn't harm me. So that's the thing. That's the thing. To get back to the innocence. Don't let the ego trick you into analyzing it to death. You know, it's fun to do it. Just don't lose sight of everything you're trying to accomplish. It's towards your own peace and happiness will happen as you let go of the idea of being guilty and sinful. That's all you need to remember.
It's the letting go.
It's the letting go.
I have an example of that experience without totally intellectualizing it.
Uh-huh.
But like, you know, I'm getting ready to take off and go try to apply my truth somewhere else. And what I'm realizing is that...
you can take that illusion with you.
Yes,
you
know
that.
I mean, I do understand that.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and because I do have an innocent mind, I believe that I can totally take responsibility and create from a different place. But my what I was going to say is, what I can see about that is, you know, like I've projected all around me, like what I think the city is doing to me and all the people in it and my reputation. And, oh, yeah, I know.
Shocked.
It's really shocking. And so I realize that I'm entirely, like, nobody's forcing me out the door. Nobody's, like, telling me to leave. Like, I'm taking full responsibility.
So why are you leaving?
I'm leaving because I need to go have a greater connection with you know, just with being able to apply the new thought,
mm-hmm.
and not distracting myself and not getting led into ways that lead me nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
mm-hmm.
and I realize, you know, like I'm going somewhere depressing where there's a lot of people that are like me. So it's going to be interesting to stand around in a street full of a bunch of mirrors and like maintain my peace, but you know, I think that it's always good to shake things up a bit,
mm-hmm.
and just kind of
mm-hmm.
do that. But you know, it's through this that I'm really realizing what it looks like,
mm-hmm.
and how much choice I have in my guilt thoughts.
Yeah. I am sustained by the love of God. That's the lesson that should become like completely ingrained,
yeah.
in your consciousness as you move into the... If I could give you any suggestion, is to go there with a sense of being sustained by God's love and not by what you're going to try to make up on your own. That because what's cool about moving into a new environment is that you erase personal history. And so when people meet you, they won't have any preconceived notions about who you are. So you could be the person you want to be immediately. And as far as they know, that's who you already are. Where in familiar environments, you're usually battling people's concepts of what they think you are from the past. And the way I figured, you have 6 months to a year to kind of like effect your change before you start recreating the same old stuff again if you don't do that. You know what I mean? Because when you go in there, it's kind of like a blank slate, but then you are bringing you.
Right.
So if you don't really like take that opportunity when it really does seem new to start being this new person, you just recreate everybody there with a different name. But they'll be exactly, and so that's the beauty of moving to a new place, is that you really do get a chance to go, bam, this is where I'm going to be this, and you won't have opposition from people because that's all they know about you. That's the beautiful part.
But I mean, the issue that I keep running up against is still the total disconnected.
Disconnect to what?
To source.
Okay, that's what we wait. Me too. That's what we all working on. So they make that okay. That's what we get. Let's get be clear about that. That's what we're with you on that. All right. We the cutest atheist in the world. It's right here with you. You know. Yeah, you know what the coarse definition of an atheist is? An atheist is someone who thinks they are alone.
No.
Because that is not acknowledging that you have a connection to source. So people think being an atheist means I don't believe in God. No, I've been an atheist every time I say I've got to do this on my own. Mm. That, and then he says a martyr is somebody that believes that life or God punishes them. So the person is going, I'm being punished, but I'm going to go out here and go right for me. But I'm going to go out here. You know, that's the martyr, you know what I'm saying? So I found that I was an atheist martyr. I had both of them down pat. I'm alone. I got to make it. I bet you the higher beings just laugh and laugh and they look at us. I bet you we're the best, the biggest comedy show in the universe. You know. Somebody else had their hands up back there too. Lisa.
Well, I was just doing the thing about separating Holy Spirit from the all.
Yeah.
You know, the one.
Yeah. Yeah.
And in trying to claim, I was good for a while, but all of a sudden I was seeing that I was hearing that there is a difference.
Right.
Between Holy Spirit and God.
Yeah. Do you see what we're saying now, though? Holy Spirit is just that part of God that's attuned to you and your personal reality. It's that part of Spirit it's that part of God that is your guide, your teacher, your helper, your healer. You know. And I think the problem that people have with that is really the ego again trying to somehow make us feel like our connection to God isn't really there, isn't real, or there's a problem with that. You know, whether it's me having a problem with the idea of the Holy Spirit, or, you know, still, what is that? Well, ultimately, it's still going to make me not want to turn to the higher power. So that's why I have to watch out by my ego. That only has one goal, to make me think I'm alone. So like when I hear people like with the chorus who will go, well, you know, God isn't, there's no point in going to God because God isn't aware of this because this is just an illusion. Okay, that's, can't you obviously see that's still just making you think that you're on your own again? Yeah. That's got to be the ego, because on the end you're still thinking you're on your own and it's up to you to do it on your own because God's not even relevant to our illusion. That's okay. You mean you can do that because I think it's cool that everybody believe what they want to believe. But me personally, there's nowhere in the world you'll get me to buy into that.
That idea doesn't bring me peace.
It doesn't bring me peace. It doesn't bring me peace to think that God is totally unaware of me existing in this physical reality.
But that's what the Course says.
But the course also said, that there's a part of God that's aware that you live in this illusion and that you can turn to as a guide and who will be there for everything you think you need. So what people are doing? Yeah. Well, but what I'm saying is, who cares? You know what I'm saying? It's like. God and the Holy Spirit aren't separate.
Okay, that's what people.
Don't make God and the Holy Spirit too. At least that's my take. Again, I'm not. If you want to believe that, whoever wants to believe that, that's okay. I mean, I don't have a problem with that. I know there's a core school of thought that goes that way. I'm just saying, no. I don't buy it. I don't personally buy it, because I can point to as many places in the book that it says you can go to the Holy Spirit and He'll take care of every need that you think you have. I'll be your food. I'll be your air. I can show you places in that book that He specifically addresses food, drink, water. You know, it's just like the Bible count. It's like, if you want to believe that God punishes, you can go to every part of the Bible that validates that. If you want to believe that God is not a part of this reality or you can't turn to God, then you can find the parts in the Course that validate that. If you want to find the parts in the Course that it says that the Holy Spirit is aware of us and we can go to the Holy Spirit, I can show you those parts too. So it really kind of boils down to, what do you want to believe? Do you want to believe?
Well, I want to believe that God does know. That, see, I just recently was reading something mm-hmm. that actually disturbed me a bit, because it clearly said that God doesn't know that you have left your oneness with Him. He only knows that you're still part of Him.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm over here sleeping.
Mm-hmm.
I'm woken up. God doesn't know I've left my illusion. So my understanding was that at the time that the separation happened is that the Holy Spirit came into our minds at the same time to help us to still be a bridge to God. So I think of the Holy Spirit as a bridge to God to help me to connect.
So where did the Holy Spirit come from?
Well, the Holy Spirit it comes from God.
Boom.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, that's my whole point. That's my whole point, is that there is only God. There is only God. There is nothing but God. That's what I'm saying. When we get into the separation, mm-hmm. it's always when the fear comes. You know, this, for me personally, it's like, for me to separate God doesn't bring me peace. Right.
Yeah.
So for me, if it doesn't bring me peace, then my personal feeling is that my ego has somehow got involved and is misinterpreting it, because if I was interpreting that statement correctly, like if you could honestly say God is totally unaware of this world, okay, and that makes you feel peace, then I would say you got the correct perception of that statement for you.
Well, it does in some ways, because here's what bothers me. If God was totally aware of this world, then we get into this whole thing of, well, then how could a loving God allow all these things that go on in the world? That's the take. That's on the take of that. If God is in the world, why would God allow that? That's the But then what's the problem?
God actually is this white, unquote, a beard. I mean,
no, I don't see God at all as a beard. But but if God is in the world, because
it's the universal law.
It's
the universal law of allowing. So it's like,
well, see, that's what I was saying.
I want to talk about this because it's been in my
mind. But what it is that it's a theoretical issue.
Exactly.
So it's a delaying maneuver. I'm not saying that you do, but I'm just saying that it's one thing that I'm sure of after like 30 years of working with this.
Yeah.
There are certain things that you can go round and round and round and round and round, and that will never get resolved until you allow yourself to have, like Court says, the experience. Like he says, there's not a universal theology, but there's a universal experience. And so the answer that we are talking about will come from an experience, more so than it would come from an explanation, even though there are explanations that are right here. Like when he says that I'm looking. But that question comes up, and I'm trying to think, what's the clarification? It was right at the beginning of the clarification. Okay, there it is, on page 77. It says... all terms of paragraph 2, all terms are potentially controversial.
Yeah.
And those who see controversy will find it. Yet those who see clarification will find it as well. They must, however, be willing to overcome controversy, recognizing that it is a defense against the truth in the form of a delaying maneuver. Theological considerations as such are necessarily controversial, since they depend on belief and can therefore be accepted or rejected. Universal theology is impossible, but a universal experience is not only possible but necessary. It is this experience toward which the course is directed. Here alone, consistency becomes possible because here alone, uncertainty ends. It says the course remains within the ego framework where it's needed. It's not concerned with what is beyond our era because it is planned only to set the direction towards it. Therefore, it uses words which are symbolic and cannot express. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Words cannot express what lies beyond symbols. It is merely the ego that questions because it is only the ego that doubts. The course merely gives another answer once a question. Like every time somebody asks me a question, I can always give them an answer. You know, and then it says, however, the course merely gives another answer once a question has been raised. However, this answer doesn't attempt to resort to inventiveness or ingenuity. These are attributes of the ego. The course is simple. It has one function, one goal. Only in that does it remain wholly consistent. So that's why I said that about, at the bottom line is go for your innocence, because that's the one function, and the one function of the course is forgiveness. And then it says the ego will demand many answers this course doesn't give. The ego does not recognize its questions the mere form of a question to which an answer is impossible. The ego may ask, how did the impossible occur? How did we get in this in the first place? It might ask, to what did the impossible happen? He said, it may ask this in many forms, yet there is no answer, only an experience. Seek only the experience and don't let theology delay you. So that's why in my classes I purposely focus on what we can do now. That's one thing you'll notice if you've been coming. I'm fanatical about what can we do now. I try to stay away from the theoretical stuff because you can't prove it.
Yeah, you just go around.
Yeah, you just go around, you know. And what happens is it usually creates some form of separation.
But there's no delay in the heart.
But there's no delay in the heart. My ego messing with me now. All of a sudden I'm strangling. But that's what I've noticed over the years.
Yeah.
And that's why I had to make a decision for myself, because I kept seeing as many places in the course where it was saying you could go to the Holy Spirit for anything, and the Holy Spirit was an aspect of God.
You know, Patty, I'm so glad I was just reading that this week, earlier this week too, and I had some fear around that, and so, but now as we're talking about it, it's kind of like, I ran away from home, and then I'm standing out there on the road going, you mean you don't see that I ran away from home? And my parents going, as far as I'm concerned, you've always been with me. How, you know, there is, you can't run away. There's no way. You've always been with me. And I'm out there going, but I ran away. Didn't you see me? And it's like, I don't know. That's just how in my mind at this moment I got it.
But you also need a guide back home.
Yeah, and I think of the Holy Spirit.
And that's where you go.
I go to the Holy Spirit a lot. I call him the Holy Spirit a lot. Actually, I actually envision
Jesus
is taking this hand, and the Holy Spirit is taking this hand, leading me to God always.
And the course defines the Holy Spirit as the voice for God.
Yeah.
That's literally how it defines it. That is God's voice. That the Holy Spirit is God's voice. That's how it describes it many, 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 many times. So how could it be God's voice and not be connected to God? You know, it's like even at a rational level, if it's Earl's voice, you know, then it came from Earl.
Okay. Yeah. So it's like God the noun, the Holy Spirit is the verb.
Yeah.
Your finger can be the Holy Spirit. I mean, my finger can do things my head can't do.
And sometimes, but see, think about this, and I'm going to grind it down on this. I think when we make God intellectual, somehow we're missing everything.
Yes.
When we sit down and we try to reason God out,
can I
feel like that's okay. Totally missing the point of God, which is the heart, which is the connection, which is the love. And that's what I love so much when I go back to the South. It's like, let's go to the Lord. I believe in God. God is going to protect me. God is going to take me through this. It's not any intellectualizing about it. It's like, I feel this connection to my source. I want to know this connection to my source. And I'm calling on my source. It's not breaking it down at an intellectual level. Because it'll drive you berserk. Plus, I always feel like it's an ego trick. And it's like, to me now, anything that separates me or anything that makes me feel fear, I just go, this is my ego. I don't know how it's my ego, but it's my ego. So I would go, you know, what perception of God brings me comfort? What way of looking at this brings me peace? That would be the direction I would want to go. And for each person, he says, an individualized curriculum. So that's why I would have to respect how you would do it, how you would do it, how you would do it, how you would do it. And that's why when I'm talking like this, it's kind of sensitive for me in the sense that I never want to give the impression that I'm in any way trying to negate what that other person is like the way you're seeing it. Because I know for you, to whatever way you're seeing it, for some reason you need to see it that way. And so for me to mess with that in any way, it goes against my grain. You know what I mean? Because I know the way I'm seeing it, I need to see it this way. You see what I mean? So for me...
I know, I suddenly feel a little wrong, I have to tell you.
And that's what... And that's right.
That's definitely separate. I just notice I feel... wrong.
Okay, right. And that's the love. Okay, and that's exactly what I realize is that in the end, the goal of the ego is to make us feel separate.
Yeah.
Even if it would use talking about God to make us, so that's what, see, that's what we have to be aware of, that it don't matter what we were talking about. The only thing that matters is it making us, are we making ourselves feel joined, or are we making ourselves feel separate? And that's why I always stop, let's stop. You know what I'm saying? Because that's why I went out of the way to say, I don't want it to be like making wrong. You know, it's like I know that it's about us joining and that it's an individual curriculum, and I want to support you in whatever level of perception feels peaceful for you, but it's an ego trick if we walk away and we came in the door feeling cool, but we walk out of the door feeling separate.
Yeah.
That was the ego. Yeah. No matter what the hell we were talking about.
Yeah.
And if we can realize that and go, you know what? That's a trick.
Yeah.
We're not going to fall for it. We went from, you give me two blinks and want to hook up, to now I kind of feel like I'm made wrong. You see what I mean? That's the trick. And that's what I love now about where I'm at in the truth. It's like I forget about the thoughts now and I go with the feeling. It's like, wait a minute, how do I feel? Is this making us feel connected? And so then we'll get to the point at another stage where we'll go, you know what? It's not a matter of who's right or who's wrong. We're feeling some separation. Let's stop this right now. Because we know we don't want to be separate. So let's go to the love. See, that's the way I deal in my experience as much as I can now. So, ooh, wait a minute.
Yeah.
This ain't what we want to feel. So let's go back. Because it don't really matter. Because whatever the truth is, we know we're going to find out sooner or later. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's just a given. We're gonna know what's the truth, but what I really want to know is we're connected now. We're supporting each other's peace now. I want you to feel innocent. You want me to feel innocent. I want you to have joy. I want to have. That's what I want to stay.
Yeah.
That's where I want to stay focused, rather than the theological, philosophical
experience.
End of it.
Yeah.
And thanks for that illustration with the in Italy.
Yeah.
Because a lot of what you tell me, I will go with.
Yeah.
And you say it's a new thought, and that's why it feels weak.
Yeah.
But I have had, I think, that happen, where I'll be in a real intense situation, and I'll actually, I mean, something in there.
And something, whatever it is, something is, all I know is, since I got into this, and I started focusing on God, I'm sustained by the love of God, and I started bringing God into every aspect of my experience. All I know is for the last 20 years of my life, I've done what I love to do every day, and I've seen myself taken care of in ways that have blown my mind. That's all I know. So I have to go with that for me. You know what I'm saying? But I also know that everybody has an individual curriculum. And that's what, so I always want to ask people, what is your curriculum? And then I'll support you in that curriculum, whatever that is for you. But that's what I've seen a lot of division in the course community around that very issue. Mm-hmm. I've seen the biggest split in the Course in Miracles community of people who study the course between the God doesn't exist and not aware of the world school and God. And in the end, if it's separation, that's my way of going. Mm-hmm. It's got to be a trick coming down, because if it's any kind of separation coming down, we know God, and that love isn't behind that.
Yeah, but when you say individual curriculum, you mean the timeline taken with the established curriculum.
Yeah, the individual curriculum would be.
Does not mean you can establish the curriculum.
But free will means you can. But he says the individualized curriculum would be the way that the curriculum actualizes itself in your personal experience.
Yeah. Right. So all my years as a tennis pro, what I've noticed is in a beginning clinic, the one thing you want everybody to get is to watch the ball as if it's going to disappear. So you go, keep your eye on the ball. And then I've coached tournament players. And you know what their fatal mistake is when they lose? Mm-hmm. They take their eye off the ball.
Right.
Now, when you guys were talking, I went, okay, what did it say in the introduction? Nothing real can be threatened.
That's why I let go of my attachment. It's like, it really doesn't matter, because whatever the truth is, it's just going to be. Mm-hmm. And we're going to all know that.
If I'm feeling fear, then that's not real at the moment.
It means the ego's here. It means I'm misperceiving, right? So then I need to go back to what is the purpose? And then the purpose is for us to join. I try to take it back to the simplest level that I can take, because I've seen the truth be used to separate as much as I've seen the truth be used to join, especially around that particular issue. Of whether God's aware of the world or not.
And who cares? Who cares? Because what really mattered in this conversation, what I really got from it, was, because you know it's funny, I started doing a little bit of marriage counseling with my husband, and that very thing that you just said that we did with our counseling last week was, if we notice that we are separating, one of us needs to be sane enough to, and we're supposed to have like a little word choice or flag of some sort to say, hey, we're off path, and if we just need to stop because we've moved into separation, and what we really want is love.
And
that's exactly what you just said.
And what was beautiful, though, that wouldn't have happened, though. What I love and what I want to acknowledge you for is that you said to me, I feel a lot of people would have just felt it, left, and never came back.
Yeah.
You know?
Now, I'm not going to be here for months, so don't.
But this happens so much, I'm used to it, I understand. but exactly, because I feel like when a person can tell you when they're feeling any kind of separation, that is one of the best examples of love possible, because they're letting you know they don't want to be. Mm-hmm. Where a lot of people just walk out, they misperceive something, and they never give an opportunity for a healing to happen.
Yeah.
You know, because that was the last thing I wanted. That's why I guess intuitively spirit said to me, just let it stop and say what your purpose is. It's like, if we feel it separate, it's the ego.
No, that was good. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I love that it was also an analogy of what I'm doing with my relationships. I thought, that's cool to see that. Yeah. You know, my counselor, she said, well, you guys need to just, you know, notice how you feel in your body. And I already notice all that when I say how I feel. But for John, that's a big thing for him to notice in his body. I'm starting to lock up. He didn't call it separation, but he starts to shut down.
Exactly.
If we could actually say, hey, we're off track.
Exactly.
Stop this.
That's how you bypass the ego. It's through your feelings. It's not through the mind. It's like we doing our mental dance, right? And all of a sudden you go, you know what? I don't feel good. That's all you got to do. Wait a minute.
Yeah.
I don't feel. So we need to regroup here because of how we feel. Forget the words now. The words getting in the way now. We want to go back to that feeling of unity. And the way you do that is to get back to what the original purpose was.
There you go.
Which was joining. And that's what you didn't say what you said because you were trying to separate. You said, I want to get some clarity on this because I've noticed this, blah, blah, blah. See, that wasn't about separation, but my own, I felt some slight defensiveness, which let me know that there was a part of me that also bought into that idea too.
Yeah.
Because you can't revolt against a concept that you don't believe in, the course said. So if somebody says something to me and I feel any resistance, I have to go, damn, I believe it.
Yeah.
You know, so it's a part of me that believes that God isn't aware of the world. Mm. That's what you made me aware of. And then there's a larger part of me that believes it is. But then I got in touch with that. Wow, okay, so it's a part of me that also don't believe that God
is
aware of us.
But the words can be the thing that get us caught in the trap.
That's right.
Right?
That's right. It's just the words.
So whatever it is, it's the words.
It's the words.
And the words are like, what are they, twice removed symbols?
That's what he said, twice removed from reality. So I know we went a little bit over.
Oh. But, thank you. Yeah.